855-839-1210. This is our happy hour brought to you by the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, where I'm very happy. We're going to be back there August 15th for our next live show. So mark your calendar, and I'll see you there at the Grand Hotel. And don't forget to make your September to Remember reservations now and get incredible savings and resort credits. By the way, one of the things about the Hunter Biden story that is not, we didn't get a chance to play, but was Hunter reminiscing about the joys of crack in that interview he did. And I'd be remiss if I did not share this with you. So while the Tulsi stuff is the primary focus of the show today, no doubt about it, as it should be, I didn't want to neglect this gem. This is Cut 37, Hunter Biden reminiscing about the joy of crack cocaine. Take a listen.
No. Do you know what I mean?
Like, well, because they think cocaine, Scarface, very cool. Yeah. Crack cocaine, they think The Wire.
Oh, in that sense? Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? You know, like, absolutely. They don't know how similar the chemical compounds are.
Well, the only difference between crack cocaine and cocaine is sodium bicarbonate and water and heat, literally.
That's it?
That's it.
And those things are pretty much free if you go to, like, a science store.
This is free. You can go to a your neighborhood convenience store and just get. Anyway, I don't want to tell people how to make crack cocaine, but it literally is a mayonnaise jar of cocaine and baking soda.
How different is the experience?
Oh, it's vastly, vastly different. And like for real, I feel really reluctant to kind of have some euphoric discussion. I know you're not asking me to do that, yeah. But have some euphoric discussion about crack cocaine.
I think this might be kind of the opposite here.
Okay, no, it's the exact opposite. I'm saying I don't want to have the experience of some euphoric recall. That's how powerful crack cocaine is. Does crack cocaine make you act any differently? No. Is it safer than alcohol? Probably. People think of crack as being dirty. It's the exact opposite. When you make crack, what you're doing is you're burning off all the impurities so that it can bind with the sodium bicarbonate, which makes it smokable. That's all. You know, all of these actors and, you know, people in the past that talked about they had a problem with cocaine and freebasing, they were smoking crack.
So straw on the stove is the same thing?
Not exactly, but close to it. But it's a little bit different. But anyway.
He sounds like he misses it. Anyway, Tulsi Gabbard today dropped the hammer on a lot of things. And Senator Josh Hawley calling now for the immediate prosecutions of everyone involved in the Russiagate hoax, saying people need to go to jail. This is Cut 13. Tulsi came out at the White House press briefing. We spent a lot of time on this earlier, and we'll do so throughout the show today. But laying out in great detail for 15 minutes every aspect of this, of every aspect of what happened, what took place, the details, very specific receipts here that Tulsi brought to the table. Here's Josh Hawley, Cut 13.
People, the commenters in this audience want to know what happens next. What does accountability truly look like?
Well, first of all, these people ought to be prosecuted for perjury at the very least. I mean, let's not forget, Brennan was trotted up to Congress multiple times, said under oath, oh, yeah, the evidence was very clear. James Comey. These are folks who have testified now. They've taken an oath and they've testified in public that they didn't do anything wrong, that they were merely reporting the evidence, that this data was solid. These, of course, all the same people who then went on to lie about the Hunter Biden laptop in 2020. Same playbook, same thing. You know, I mean, just outright lie to the American people, get the media to do your bidding. Of course, in 2020, they used censorship as well by all of the tech companies and the media companies. But people need to be accountable here. People need to go to jail for this. I mean, if you can just undermine our elections, if in America now you can just say, you know, I didn't like the outcome of that election. I think maybe I'm just going to go and try to get it overturned. I think maybe I'm going to go get the FBI and the CIA to go investigate the incoming president, get him wiretapped, get his associates wiretapped, get them impeached multiple times. I mean, what separates us then from some third world country? What becomes of our Constitution? It'll be in shreds. Now, there's got to be real accountability here. Real accountability means there needs to be prosecutions.
And what did they do? What did they do? Well, Tulsi explains a lot of this. This is Cut number 28. They expressed, they manipulated intelligence. And what followed afterward is a years-long coup. And why do they do this again? Because it was after the election and they needed to undermine this president. You know, they needed to undermine him. So they created all this stuff after the election because they wanted to cripple Donald Trump's presidency and ultimately, I think, play on Republican anti-Russia ideals to get him removed from office. I think that's what the entire plot was about. By the way, hat tip to my buddy and Republican rock star, Val. Val sent me this post earlier today. I got to share this with you because this is pretty amazing. And Val Biancaniello, who made some news last year during the election, and she's a great friend of the show. So she sent me this piece. It's from the Commonwealth Foundation. Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, $3 million a year, 21 states.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rizzioli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, a premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
Sorry about that. A little technical glitch, but we're back. So I was saying about Josh Shapiro's social media team. I think you heard that part, right? Guys, did that get through?
We got part of it. We didn't get
part of it. All right. So Val sent this story. It's the Commonwealth Foundation put out a piece. His $900,000 social media team, $3 million a year of your tax dollars on a 21-person communications team, a self-promotion machine for his political ambitions. That's what Governor Josh Shapiro is doing as he tries to run for president. Anyway, so Tulsi Gabbard today came out and said that the people here who were trying to stop President Trump, this is cut number 28, this is what they engaged in. Take a listen.
Tent and what followed afterward can only be described as a years-long coup and a treasonous conspiracy against the American people, our republic, and an attempt to undermine President Trump's administration.
Now, CNN, this is cut 29 now, CNN trying to do a little damage control here. They actually cut away just as Tulsi Gabbard was outlining the lengths to which the Obama administration went to manufacture the Russia collusion hoax. So, again, you know, to Gerald Posner's point earlier about the media trying to play defense for Obama, this is the best example I can give you. Here you have the director of national intelligence at the White House detailing how Barack Obama, James Clapper, James Comey, John Brennan, all these other deep state hacks manufactured intelligence to try to weaken this president and bring down his administration. And CNN cuts away from it. Cut 29.
Multiple intelligence community assessments released in the months leading up to the November 2016 election concluded that Russia had neither the intent nor capability to impact the outcome of the U.S. election. On December 5th.
We've been listening there to the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, continuing on what has now been a multi-day effort, not only with public statements like this, but release of documents to attempt to back up the quite extreme allegation that President Obama is guilty of treason and that he worked in some sort of conspiracy with Hillary Clinton, etc., in the assessment by the intelligence community at the time that Russia interfered in the 2016 election.
CNN calling it right up the middle. Unbelievable. Cutting away from the Director of National Intelligence and then basically just throwing water on that and just saying, oh, poo-poo that. That's craziness. This is cut 33. To Gabbard's point, you know, if Russia was really trying to influence the election, they would have released all this damaging information on Hillary Clinton. Like the fact that she was using tranquilizers. Elephant tranquilizers. I don't know for sure if they were elephant tranquilizers, but in my mind, they were elephant tranquilizers. Cut 33.
I think the underlying point there is that we understand from intelligence what Russia said that they had. And the important point here is that if they were trying to influence the election, as President Obama and James Clapper and John Brennan, everybody said they were doing in order to support Donald Trump's election, they would have released the most damning of that information, some of which I detailed here. You'll find the rest in the report prior to the election to help Donald Trump win. They specifically withheld what they had on her, the most damning information, because they thought that she would win the election. They had plans to release it just prior to her inauguration to, again, sow discord and chaos in America.
If they wanted her to win, they would have put out all the things that they had on Hillary Clinton, and they had a lot. But, you know, speaking of CNN being a joke, and this is cut 34, Caroline Leavitt, the White House press secretary, went after the media for, again, covering this up and trying to act like this is nothing but a distraction from Epstein And it's just it's pathetic. It really is. It's pathetic the way that CNN cut away from it, especially when Caitlin Collins, by the way, was asking a question and accusing Tulsi Gabbard of just doing this to curry favor with the president. Cut 34.
This is truly one of the greatest political scandals in American history. And reporters at legacy outlets, some of which are sitting in this room today, like the New York Times and the Washington Post, were ridiculously awarded Pulitzer Prizes for their perpetuation of this hoax. It's well past time for those awards to be stripped from the journalists who received them. It is not journalism to propagate political disinformation in service of the Democrat Party and those in the intelligence community who hand over out of context and fake intelligence to push a false political narrative.
That's correct. And the White House press secretary today, and this is cut number one, opened the White House press briefing by laying all this out in great detail and then calls Tulsi Gabbard up to the podium. Now, again, these are people who are not going to put their credibility on the line here and put all this out there just merely to distract from Jeffrey Epstein. So Maggie Haberman in The New York Times has a piece in The New York Times that apparently Attorney General Pam Bondi said Donald Trump's name was on the Epstein client list. Now, we're also told there's no Epstein client list. I think one of the big concerns that everybody has right now is that the Democrats manipulated the Epstein information in the time that they were in the Justice Department. Look, I mean, if these people are capable of orchestrating this coup against Donald Trump to try to weaken his presidency and take him down, they're capable of anything. If Donald Trump's name was on the Epstein client list, if he had any connection, any real connection with Jeffrey Epstein, let's understand this point, okay? That would have come out in the 2016 election. It would have come out in the 2020 election. It would have come out in the 2024 election. I think the fear that Republicans have right now about releasing information is that it's entirely possible that these people have manipulated that information too, just like they manipulated the information around Russia collusion. And that is the big problem. And that is the big question. By the way, President Trump is speaking. He's delivering remarks at an AI summit right now, and he's talking about the trade deal that they announced with Japan. We may jump in on this. This AI summit obviously is very important, but I don't want to get away from the story about Caroline Leavitt and Tulsi Gabbard. So we will continue to follow that for you as well. But let's jump into the president here. This is a big deal, obviously. Artificial intelligence, where all this goes, and what the president has to say about it. So let's take a listen here.
We had the tariff at 25%. As you know, we had a tariff at 25%. And this was these are great people that we negotiated with. But we agreed to reduce it to 15 based on the fact that Japan has agreed for the first time ever to open up its country to trade so that all of our American businesses and business geniuses, including many in this room, can go out and do business openly and freely in Japan, a very rich and prosperous and profitable and wonderful country, frankly. And we will pay a zero tariff as we do business in Japan. So we're paying zero. They're paying 15. We're getting $550 billion. And to be exact, it's 90% of that, but we control the whole lot of it. And it's really been great. And they're very happy. It's 90% of that, but we control the whole lot of it. And it's really been great. And they're very happy, and their stock market went up, and our stock market went up, and that's supposed to be the way it is. Ours went way up, and theirs went up. And we've made numerous other deals like that. But the opening up of a country is very important to us. We have numerous countries that have opened their doors, just made some incredible transactions, but we're going to have a very, very simple tariff for some of the countries. There's so many countries you can't negotiate deals with everyone, so we'll have a straight, simple tariff of anywhere between 15 and 50%. A couple of we have 15 because we haven't been getting along with those countries too well, so we just say, let's pay 50, and that's the way it is. But remember, we get countries that were closed, always closed. Everyone in this room would never remember any of them to be open. We've offered such a deal to the European Union, where we're in serious negotiations. And if they agree to open up the union to American businesses, then we will let them pay a lower tariff. So the tariff is very important, but the opening of a country, I think, can be more important if our businesses do the job that they're supposed to be doing. Such openings are worthy of many points in tariffs, and they're a good thing, not only for, as an example, Japan or Europe, but certainly a great thing for America, because it allows our businesses to go out and fairly compete and do really well if they compete properly, like the people that I know. Everyone in this room, practically, I know, has competed very successfully. I haven't seen any, and I know the losers just like I know the winners. I'll tell you, I don't see any of the losers here. But now, if some of the countries that pay 25% or more on orders complain, remember that Japan was willing to pay upfront the $550 billion for that privilege of negotiating with the United States of America. We also made a deal yesterday with the Philippines and Indonesia, which in both cases will be opening up their country. And we're in the process of completing our deal with China. And as you know, the UK, we made a deal. It was a very good deal for everybody. Everybody's happy. It's always nice when everybody can be happy. But mostly we'll be charging straight tariffs to most of the rest of the world, because we have over 200 countries. People don't realize that's a lot of deals. Even if you're like me, a deal junkie, that's a lot of deals. That would be too much for anybody. Ooh. How did we do with this country that I never heard of? We got a lot of deals cooking. But America is taking in hundreds of billions of dollars like it never has before. Investments into our country at the highest point ever in history. And we've just really been opened up for business for 3 of the 6 months. The first couple of months, we got ourselves all set, done a great job with our military, as you know. You saw that 2 weeks ago when you saw the way those incredible B-2s flew into Iran and took out an entire nuclear potential deadly force. But I want to thank some of the incredible people that I see before me, including White House AI czar David Sachs. He's been great for organizing this very important summit, and especially for putting it in D.C. where it's a little bit easier. I don't know if it's easy for you, but it's a hell of a lot easier for me. Along with his colleagues at the All In podcast, which is very good. I did that podcast a year and a half ago, and I said, this is something. It was pretty new, pretty raw. Everybody I knew saw that podcast. I said, well, he's got something pretty good. Who is that guy? He's a smart guy, by the way. I think if I ever get in, which at the time people were saying I had a shot, not as good a shot. As it turned out, we won in numbers that nobody believes. We won every swing state. We won by millions and millions of votes, winning the popular vote. We won with the districts, as they would call them, 2,750 to 505. And that's why the map is almost completely red, except for a couple of little blue areas on each side of it. But it was a great experience, frankly, for me. And hopefully it's a great experience and been a great experience for our country, because they're saying we had the greatest 6 months that a president has ever had, the opening 6 months. And I'm not even sure, maybe 6 months. I'm not sure it's the opening, but let's call it the opening 6 months. It sounds a little bit nicer. I want to also say hello and thank to Chamath and his wonderful wife, Nat. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you very much. It was great seeing you again. Great couple. David Friedberg and even, as we know, Jason Calacanis. I say even. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Jason. I appreciate that. Yeah, he's a good person. Thanks as well to the Hill and Valley Forum and our future Undersecretary of State, Jacob Hellberg. Good work. Good. Stand up, Jason. Good. I met him a year and a half ago, and I was very impressed. I said, let's bring him in. We bring in a lot of smart people. And David's been unbelievable as the job he's doing. Along with Secretaries Doug Burgum, who's been incredible. Doug. Thank you. Thank you, Doug. Great job. He's producing low-cost energy. We're down to $64. I want to get it down a little bit further if we can. I don't know if the oil companies love that or not, but we want to have very inexpensive electricity so that you can power up the plants, because you need more electricity than any human beings ever in the history of the world. When I heard what you really need, I said, you got to be kidding. Double what we produce right now for everything, right? I don't know. You're going to... Jensen, you're going to have to explain that to me someday, why they need so damn much. Couldn't you do with a little bit less? My father was always used to say, turn off the lights, son. But you guys are turning up the lights. I want to thank Howard Lutnick for doing a terrific job. He was involved in the big deal that we just completed with Japan. Howard, wherever you are, Howard. Where is Howard? Hi, Howard. Great job you did. Appreciate it. Really, that was an interesting negotiation, wasn't it? These are tough people. These are good negotiators, I will tell you, Japan. But they love their country, and they do what's right for their country. I want to thank Chris Wright, if Chris is around. Chris is here because he's helping with tremendous energy success that we're having.
Rick, we'll come back since the president's doing his thank yous and introductions. Let me just tell you about my friends at Tri-County Auto. Tri-County is the best, and their specials they have right now are outstanding. July, right here, right now, employee pricing plus for everybody. That means you pay what the employees pay on their great products, including their American-made Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram, baby. Now, I love Tri-County Auto. I love the fact that they stand by our show. They support our show. And Brian Krieger, Cheryl Krieger, the whole team there, they're dedicated to our success. And I want you to stop by and see them. They're right off of Route 422, Limerick, Exton, Collegeville. It's so easy to get to from everywhere you are. King of Prussia. I mean, go see them. And they have Toyotas as well, with great Toyota specials too. But for me, driving a Jeep Wrangler, I can tell you that the specials they have right now on Jeeps, some of the financing and the leases and the rates are unbelievable. And all you got to do to see their incredible inventory is go to tricounty.com. Tricounty.com. And again, they're our official car dealership for the show, with good people there dedicated to making you happy, and you can trust them too, because that's key in everything in life. Trust is everything. But so is that pride of driving American, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram. And the savings and the employee pricing plus means this is the time. And with the One Big Beautiful Bill, interest on American car loans, cars made in America, tax deductible. So America's hot right now, and American cars are hot right now. So I want you to go see Tri-County Auto. Like I said, if you go to tricounty.com, you'll see their incredible selection. And if you go meet them, you'll have a great experience. You'll understand exactly why I'm so proud to partner with them for this show, and why we're so proud that they are our official car sponsor for the Zeoli Show. Tri-County Auto Group, tricounty.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right. The president is speaking right now at an artificial intelligence summit. That is the big story of the hour, brought to you by Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, with two locations to serve you. Dr. Mike is the man who will give you the smile of your dreams. I want to jump in here. Obviously, this is an incredibly important topic, artificial intelligence, what it means for America, what it means for our national security. So let's take a listen.
Artificial defense. Whether we like it or not, we're suddenly engaged in a fast-paced competition to build and define this groundbreaking technology that will determine so much about the future of civilization itself because of the genius and creativity of Silicon Valley. And it is incredible, incredible genius. Without question, the most brilliant place anywhere on Earth, America is the country that started the AI race. And as President of the United States, I'm here today to declare that America is going to win it. We're going to work hard. We're going to win it. Because we will not allow any foreign nation to beat us. Our children will not live on a planet controlled by the algorithms of the adversaries advancing values and interests contrary to our own. We don't want to have contrary interests. We want to get along, and we'll get along with other countries. We're having a great relationship, as I told you, with those countries that we mentioned, with Japan and Indonesia and so many others. The European Union, we're getting along. We're getting along very well with China. A lot of respect for President Xi. We have a great relationship, and we'll see how it all works out. But we're getting along with countries very, it's really been pretty amazing, I will say that, and it's a good thing. It's a good thing, not a bad thing. So from this day forward, it'll be a policy of the United States to do whatever it takes to lead the world in artificial intelligence, such an important thing happening. This is really something that nobody expected. It just popped out of the air, and here we are. But we will defend our nation, our values, our future, and our freedom, and it will be really great. But what we really need to be successful is a very simple phrase called common sense, and that begins with a common sense application of artificial and intellectual property rules. It's so important. You can't be expected to have a successful AI program when every single article, book, or anything else that you've read or studied, you're supposed to pay for. Gee, I read a book. I'm supposed to pay somebody. And, you know, we appreciate that, but you just can't do it because it's not doable. And if you're going to try and do that, you're not going to have a successful program. I think most of the people in the room know what I mean. When a person reads a book or an article, you've gained great knowledge. That does not mean that you're violating copyright laws or have to make deals with every content provider. And that's a big thing that you're working on right now, I know, but you just can't do it. China's not doing it. And if you're going to be beating China, and right now we're leading China very substantially in AI, very, very substantially, and nobody's seen the amount of work that's going to be bursting upon the scene. But you have to be able to play by the same set of rules. So when you have something, when you read something, and when it goes into this vast intelligence machine, we'll call it, you cannot expect to every time, every single time, say, oh, let's pay this one that much, let's pay this one. It just doesn't work that way. Of course, you can't copy or plagiarize an article. But if you read an article and learn from it, we have to allow AI to use that pool of knowledge without going through the complexity of contract negotiations, of which there would be thousands for every time we use AI. We also have to have a single federal standard, not 50 different states regulating this industry of the future. And some people would say, gee, that's an unpopular thing to say. I was told before I got up here, this is an unpopular thing because some people, they don't want that. But I want you to be successful, and you can't have one state holding you up. You can't have three or four states holding you up. You can't have a state with standards that are so high that it's going to hold you up. You have to have a federal rule and regulation. Hopefully you'll have the right guy in this position that's going to supplant the states. If you are operating under 50 different sets of state laws, the most restrictive state of all will be the one that rules. So you could have a state run by a crazy governor, a governor that hates you, a governor that's not smart, or maybe a governor that's very smart, but decides that he doesn't like the industry and he can put you out of business because you're going to have to go to that lowest common denominator. We need one common sense federal standard that supersedes all states, supersedes everybody, so you don't end up in litigation with 43 states at one time. You got to go litigation free. It's the only way. And we also have to watch Europe, Asia, and all foreign countries so that they don't make rules and regulations that likewise make it impossible for you to do business and where you'd have to make everything in AI cater to them. Because, again, you'd have to cater to the toughest country or to the toughest state. You can't do that because it would ruin it. I just terminated all of the, as an example, California car emissions rules, which were a disaster. It cost them just billions of dollars as an industry, but thousands of dollars per car, the emission rule standard, because they were making the production of an automobile almost impossible and at a tremendously higher cost, much more expensive than it should cost, for very little gain, for actually, in my opinion, negative gain. The automobile was worse. Under this administration, our innovation will be unmatched and our capabilities will be unrivaled. And with the help of many of the people in this room, America's ultimate triumph will be absolutely unstoppable. We will be unstoppable as a nation. Again, we're way ahead and we want to stay that way. We can't let individual smaller units stop it, because that's the only thing that can stop it and can really mess it up. As with any such breakthrough, this technology brings the potential for bad as well as for good, for peril as well as for progress. But the daunting power of AI is the, really, it's not going to be a reason for retreat from this new frontier. On the contrary, it is the more reason we must ensure it is pioneered first and best. We have to have the best, the first pioneer. We are the best and the first pioneers, and we're going to be really putting a nation that we love, America, we're going to be putting it first. I have an expression, America first, make America great again. A lot of great expressions, but they're all so true. We're going to make America great again. We're going to make this industry absolutely the top, because right now it's a beautiful baby that's born. We have to grow that baby and let that baby thrive. We can't stop it. We can't stop it with politics. We can't stop it with foolish rules and even stupid rules. At the same time, we want to have rules, but they have to be smart. They have to be brilliant. They have to be more brilliant than even the technology itself. Surely there will be challenges on the path ahead, but together we will meet them and transcend them all. We are Americans, and we are Americans first. I have a couple of people I know that don't happen to be from here, but I wish you a lot of luck anyway. I'm looking at three people that are not Americans, but very good people. Please treat them nicely. But we do not shrink from the future or cower in the face of uncertainty. We dominate the future. We conquer new frontiers and we control our own fate. And we determine by doing that our own destiny. Winning this competition will be a test of our capacities unlike anything since the dawn of the space age. I believe that. It's hard to believe as the president, the amount of enthusiasm for this one industry. I mean, I can talk about cars where we're doing incredibly well. We have car companies moving in all the time. But I talk about other industries. Everybody's saying this is going to dominate the world, going to dominate every industry that ever conceived. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if it's true. But I can tell you that a lot of very brilliant people think it is true. It'll dominate everything. It will challenge us to marshal all of our strength and flex the muscles of American ingenuity and resolve like probably never before. It will require us to blast through obsolete systems, cut through thickets of regulation. We've got to get rid of some of the regulation, but we want good regulation and rebuild the industrial bedrock of our country. And perhaps most importantly, the AI race will demand a new spirit of patriotism and national loyalty in Silicon Valley and long beyond Silicon Valley. For too long, much of our tech industry pursued a radical globalism that left millions of Americans feeling distrustful and betrayed. And you know that. Everybody knows that. Everybody in this room certainly does. Many of our largest tech companies have reaped the blessings of American freedom while building their factories in China, hiring workers in India, and slashing profits in Ireland. You know that? All the while dismissing and even censoring their fellow citizens right here at home. Under President Trump, those days are over. We need U.S. technology companies to be all in for America. We want you to put America first. You have to do that. That's all we ask. That's all we ask. To partner with our tech geniuses and achieving this vision today, we're releasing the White House AI Action Plan. Big stuff. We're signing it right after this. In fact, I see it sitting right there. Maybe I should just sign it right now. Who the hell has to make the rest of this speech, right? But here are the pillars of the strategy. First, my administration will use every tool at our disposal to ensure that the United States can build and maintain the largest, most powerful, and most advanced AI infrastructure anywhere on the planet. America needs new data centers, new semiconductor and chip manufacturing facilities, new power plants and transmission lines. And under my leadership, we're going to get that job done. And it's going to be done with certainty and with environmental protection and all of the things that we have to do to get it done properly. Virtually all of these large capital investments can be and should be made by the private sector. And they want to do that. They just want to be able to do it. But for that reason, America must once again be a country where innovators are rewarded with a green light, not strangled with red tape so they can't move, so they can't breathe. And that's not going to happen. You're going to see things that you've never seen in this country before. So often, and I've been watching for many years, I've watched regulation. I've been a victim of regulation, a zone change that takes 6 years for a building in Manhattan or whatever. But I was good at zone changes, but it took a long time. By the time you got the zoning, the market changed. You didn't want to build the building. You say, well, but in some cases that made you lucky, didn't it? Huh? And some could, not too many people understand that in this room, but in some cases, waiting for that approval as the market collapsed was a good thing, not a bad thing. But it's time to reclaim our heritage as a nation of builders. And that's why, upon taking office, I signed a historic executive order directing that every and this is so important, for every new regulation, 10 old regulations must be immediately eliminated. So we have old regulations must be immediately eliminated.
That's a big deal.
Old regulations that clog up the books that don't even mean anything anymore. You know, in my first term, I had more regulation cuts than any president in history times four, and that included two-term presidents, where you're talking about 8 years. We had more than any other president, and I think we may even top it this year. We may very well be able to top it during this period of time, because you're really, you are a regulation-prone group, and we're looking to get those regulations out of your way so you can use your genius. Earlier this month, we also enacted the largest tax cuts in American history when I signed the One Big Beautiful Bill into law. And I think the most important thing in the whole tax cut, in terms of pure economics, and I think one of the reasons that my first, you know, we had the most successful economy in history during my first term, and I think this is going to blow it away. So far it is, and I think this is going to blow it away. But the reason we had was I had expensing at 100%. And what we did is we included 100% in this bill expensing for all capital expenditures, including investments in factories and equipment and structure. Structure wasn't included last time. So even structure, and you're able to write it all off immediately. That's the biggest thing. Not 38 years, not 42 years. You're able to write it all off immediately. And this time we've made it for 10 years, not for 1 year. We've made it for 10 years. So you have a much longer period, but I'd say get out and take advantage of it. I think that's one of the reasons that we had such an incredible success with the first tax cuts. And one of the things that this bill does is it extends the first tax cuts and makes them permanent. And in addition to that, we were granted other taxes like no tax on tips, no tax on Social Security, no tax on overtime. A lot of great things. One of the things that I mentioned, not so pertinent here, but if you're in the automobile business, it's pertinent. I said, why is it that people like us always are looking for expenses and deductions? And people that buy automobiles that really have to go out and borrow money to buy a car, why aren't they allowed to deduct the interest on their loan to buy a car from their income tax. And we got it approved. We got it approved. And that is such a big thing. And I think that's going to be such a big thing for the automobile industry. We're going to be making more cars. Within a few years, we're going to be making more cars that we made in the very beginning, in the super prime. You know, we lost.
See, that's why I said American cars. You buy American. And I will jump out of this, Justin. Thank you. That's why I said you buy American and you can deduct the tax interest. So go to Tri-County Auto. TriCounty.com. Do it now. TriCounty.com. Exactly like what the president's saying. All right, listen, how's this for a great idea? You can book your next office bachelor, bachelorette, or private party at Bob's Little Sports Shop in Glassboro, New Jersey. That's right. Bob's offers men and women trained instructors, private and closed events that can host up to 30 people, where you book a smaller group, 10 or less, during business hours and have your own instructor for some shooting range fun. What a unique event, right? I mean, totally different, totally out of the box. Call for pricing and details. No alcohol or drugs permitted on premises, obviously. Call Bob's to book their co-ed shooting event Sunday, August 24th at 1 p.m. Bob's also offers private and group lessons on introduction to firearms, shooting and cleaning classes. Bob's instructors are certified NRA and range safety officers. Firearms ID cards are not required for anyone attending events, and no experience is necessary. Bob's also hosts shooting events for new shooters or anyone interested in learning about proper firearm ownership. Just visit bobslittlesportshop.com. BobsLittleSportsShop.com. They are my go-to for the Second Amendment, and they should be yours as well. And some great, great, great people that work there. And talk about an amazing event, right? This ad sponsored by Bob's Little Sports Shop. Check out all the details. My friends, my go-to, my place for safety and firearms, Bob's Little Sports Shop, BobsLittleSportsShop.com.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.